Good afternoon to the Energy Utilities and Telecommunications confirmation hearing for Ms. Ellen Anderson. And just a few remarks on this. We are going to Ms. Anderson's, Commissioner Anderson's remarks first. But when it's time for vote, we are going to give all the members a chance to vote. So we may have to go into a brief recess. We have a very busy afternoon. There's about five spread out all over the place between the SOB, upstairs, downstairs, wherever. So just fair warning, we're trying to gather everybody together. But I think we'll just go ahead. We're past our time anyway. And with that, Commissioner Anderson, if you would like to come up and give your remarks and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for scheduling the hearing today. It's a pleasure to be back in front of this committee on which I spent many, many years and have presented many things at this table, many bills. So this is a new experience for me. I'm really honored to be here and honored by the governor's choice to appoint me to the Public Utilities Commission and to serve as the chair. As you all know, I served in the Senate since 1992. For those 18 and a half years, that was a great privilege for me to represent my constituents, and I enjoyed it very much. And I'm very excited about this new opportunity that I've had to serve the people of Minnesota and the public interest in a new way, in a different way. And I want to talk to you about that just a little bit today, about how my new role is very different from my old one. And you probably know my background. I appreciate very much that the governor believes me to be highly qualified for this position. And I'll just repeat that I am a licensed attorney, and that's one of the criteria listed in the statute as one of the criteria for a commissioner. And served as a law clerk many years ago for the Court of Appeals. So I have a little bit of experience in my background in the court system, which I found very valuable given our quasi-judicial role at the Public Utilities Commission. As you also probably know, I served on this committee, on the Energy and Telecom Policy Committee, for my entire time in the Senate and chaired it for several years, chaired the Budget Committee as well for several years, and have authored and passed many, many energy bills, some telecom bills, and many consumer protection bills over my many years here. And I appreciate the tremendous support that I've gotten from so many people since this appointment took effect, and I am really touched by what people have said. And I it's hard to talk about myself, but people have acknowledged that I am an expert on energy policy, and so I'll just say that because I appreciate that other people have said that, and I take that as high praise that means a lot to me. I've also taught energy law and policy. So in terms of background, that's what brings me here. And I've been serving at the Public Utilities Commission now for almost, I think, a month and a half. So I'm in the new job, and I'm learning so much. And I'm learning that being an expert as a legislator does not mean I'm really an expert in energy policy and telecommunications policy. And I'm learning that I have a lot to learn. And I've been very gratified by the great staff support that we have. We have a lot of very knowledgeable staff at the Public Utilities Commission who are experts in their areas, who have spent a lot of time briefing me and getting me up to speed as I've been presiding at the hearings already from day one. So I want to talk just for a minute, if I can, about what the role of a PUC commissioner is, because I think that's really the question before us is how does that change my role from being a senator to being a PUC commissioner? Because it is very different. And I want you to understand that I understand and embrace that difference and am really excited to serve the people of Minnesota in a different way. I'm very aware that being an advocate, when you're a legislator, you're an advocate for your constituents, for the issues that you try to fight for and try to work on. And as a PUC commissioner, you are not in that role anymore. You're not a policymaker. And so I recognize that that is the role of the legislature, and that our job as commissioners is to follow the laws as they are, not as we would like them to be, meaning that what you do will direct what we are able to do, because our job as at the PUC is to implement and interpret those laws and try to apply them in a way that best serves the public interest of the state of Minnesota. So how we do that is we have, by statute, several different roles, but the primary role that we function in is a quasi-judicial role, and that means that we have cases that are brought in front of us. We had a very long agenda today on our docket, and we serve very much like judges do in that role. We have to make our decisions based on the record in front of us. We talk about the four corners of the record in front of us. That is our universe of information, along with the statutes that guides our decisions. And so very much, we operate very much as judges, and we have very, very strict ex parte and open meeting laws at the Public Utilities Commission. So it's a very unique agency. It's independent. It's not a policy arm of the governor's office like other state agencies are, because it is a quasi-judicial agency. And so it's set up by law to exist in a way that is independent, transparent, accountable, but designed to serve the public interest. So in terms of the stability that it's set up by law to be bipartisan, and I talked with many of you about this. As you know, there are five commissioners, and I am one of five, and by law, there can be only three of one party, and so I have one of the spots designated for a DFL member, and only a DFL person could be appointed to this particular seat. And the ex parte rules and the open meeting rules serve to really reinforce our independence. We do not have caucuses like legislators have caucuses. We do not gather together in a room and discuss how we're going to handle the cases that come in front of us. We can't do that. You cannot have three commissioners together discussing any matters that are material to cases that are in front of us. And so the bulk of our work is done in public. Our deliberations are done in public. When we make our decisions, they are done as a panel, and we go back and forth, and we make those decisions. And it's a really unique and different way to do business, and I've found I really very much enjoy it and am adapting quickly, I hope. As I said, the commission is by law, it's bipartisan, so that it's set up to maintain party differences and not swing in any one political direction. And so it does have bipartisan representation. But in practice, what I found is that the commission is not political. It's really apolitical or nonpartisan in operation. And I haven't found that, you know, and other commissioners have said this to me in the time that I've been there, that when you see how we vote on our cases in front of us, you just don't see an alignment based on party lines. It doesn't fall that way. That's not how we operate at the PUC. The role of the chair, the governor has the ability to appoint a chair for the 4 years that the governor serves. So I was very honored to be appointed chair, and I'll tell you what that means. I have a very nice office, and I am able to work on some administrative functions, sign timesheets and things like that, and I preside at the meetings, and that means I have the gavel and I direct the traffic. But It's very different from the legislature in that regard as well, because we are one among equals when it comes to decision making. And David Boyd, Commissioner David Boyd, who was the former chair, told me a good story yesterday that really illustrates that. He said when Commissioner Tom Pugh, who I recently replaced, when he was appointed, the chair was Leroy Coppendreyer. And Tom Pugh came from the legislature just like I did. And Chair Coppendreyer said to Tom Pugh when he was getting started, you know, it's not like the legislature. You can vote against the chair. And I guess several weeks passed by, and Commissioner Pugh took that advice to heart. And after several weeks, Commissioner Coppendreyer went back and said, you don't have to vote against the chair every time. So it's very, very different. But I have found that the commissioners are all, we are equals when it comes to decision making. And so my job as chair is not to decide any outcomes of cases. That takes three votes. And it, as I said, you really can't predict what those three votes will look like. But oftentimes, very often, there are four or five votes, and that's what I've found as well, that we tend to find consensus many times in my long experience in the last month and a half. So we're independent, we're quasi-judicial, and as you know, and for the newer members, having served in the Senate for the years that I've been in the Senate, all of the confirmations to the PUC have been nonpartisan, and I've really appreciated that. And we've had a number of legislators confirmed to the Public Utilities Commission. So I think that's really all I wanted to say about how the commission operates. And then finally, just to kind of very briefly just tell you what I think our job is, not the mechanics so much, but our job based on Minnesota law is to use our best judgment to serve the public interest and to try, as you know, we oversee electricity, natural gas, and telecommunications. It's to ensure our energy supply is affordable and reliable and environmentally sound, and ensure that we have affordable and accessible telecommunication services around the whole state of Minnesota. I found it very interesting that on the energy side, we tend to, I mean, as regulated monopolies, we tend to, you know, there's all this theory about rate regulation and energy regulation that I've been reading, and these textbooks piled up on my desk. But, you know, the economic theory is that we're sort of creating a substitute for competition when we have a monopoly. And in and economists, you can tell me if I'm getting not saying that right. But on the telecommunications side, we're trying to ensure there really is vibrant competition so that even in the smallest communities around the state, people have service and they have some kind of consumer choice. So I am obviously following those laws and spending a lot of time reading the Minnesota statutes, probably in more depth than I did when I was here, and trying to interpret them and reconcile them. And I'm following already, as I've been there for a month and a half, the constraints of this role and the different hat that I am wearing. And I'm very glad to be doing that. I'm excited about doing it. And I have no regrets about not being an advocate or a politician. I'm very excited about being a commissioner and following those requirements under Minnesota's laws and the expectations of the public as well, that we serve in a way that protects the public interest, and that demands us to be less political and not to be advocates, but to be independent, to be independent of outside influences, to not follow opinions or agendas, but to do the very best for the people of Minnesota based on the laws and the information that we have in front of us. And so that's what I'm doing, and that's what I intend to do in the future in my six-year term. So I guess I'll stop there. I wanted to point out that Secretary Burl Haar and Assistant Secretary Dan Wolf are here as well. If there's any specific questions or questions about the PUC that I can't answer, they can answer them for me. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Anderson. And I think there are some questions. I do have a couple just real quickly. In your 1.5 months there, what's your biggest surprise?
That nobody really calls me up. I know that's kind of a silly answer, Madam Chair, but honestly, it's true, and now everyone's going to start calling me probably. But it's just so very different. It's because we just simply are not lobbied. And we, because of our ex parte rules, we're just very, very sensitive and careful about input that could be related to any matters in front of us. And so it's we operate more with our staff. We spend a lot of time studying issues and studying the records of cases. And so it's very, very different than what I'm used to in my former political role. That's maybe not a substantive answer that you were looking for, but that's sort of
that's,
the...
No, that's good. That's got to be a little strange. You're always lobbied before, and all of a sudden there's nobody knocking on the door. How about as far as what you perceive as being some looming issues on the horizon that the POC will have to make some rulings on? What have you seen that are serious issues that are going to have to be addressed?
Well, I really can't speak on any specific issues that are coming before us in now or in the future.
And globally issues, these global issues.
Well, you know, our job in energy is to, the biggest, most contentious issues that we have are rate cases and siting of power lines and power plants and wind farms. And those are always contentious. Mm-hmm. And I've just gotten a taste of those so far, but that's absolutely, those are the things that will be the most difficult over time and into the future, I think. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, what we do is try to find balance, and it's not always easy to balance the public interest with affordability and making sure that things stay affordable for consumers. And so... There's usually no simple yes or no or right or wrong answers to most of the things that come in front of us, I would say.
Okay. Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, thank you. Commissioner, I've got a couple of questions here, maybe some follow-up. And as you know, and you know, I represent an area down in Goodhue County, and we've got issues with nuclear storage in our area. We also have issues with wind siting, and I guess I'd like to hear, Madam Chair, what your position is on local government's authority to enact stricter guidelines or any guidelines as far as it comes to siting.
You know, Madam Chair,
Commissioner Anderson,
that seems to be an issue that's very squarely related to cases that will be coming in front of us soon or sometime, and so I just can't answer that level of specificity at this time. And I apologize for that.
Senator.
Madam Chair, could you maybe give me your thoughts on whether or not the PUC would respect local counties' input?
Commissioner Anderson.
You know, what I can do is give you just some general thoughts, and maybe that will help. I think... you know, and I've tried to understand what the Public Utilities Commission has done in the past and what the rules and the laws say, and trying to understand that and what sort of those general principles are for siting of those kinds of facilities. And I think it's tends to be a balance between private property rights and public interest and need for new energy facilities. I mean, that's the very difficult balance always. I think our laws and our rules also have some level of balance between state and local input. I guess back in the power line conflicts, I was told by a longtime staffer yesterday that back in the power line conflicts, I guess in the 70s, there was an effort to cite those power lines county by county, and I think the state, and it was very contentious. Let me know if I'm saying too much. We're talking about the 1970s, so I think it's safe, but and I think as a consequence of those, there were, you know, very hostile battles about those power lines. And I think after that time, the state did pass its siting laws that suggested there should be some kinds of state guidelines, because electricity is essential, it's necessary, it's, you know, it's our economy's backbone. You have to ensure that we have access to electricity. And so that's sort of the state interest. But as I understand the siting rules and laws that we have in place, they work very closely with local governments and take input and listen to what local rules might be in place. And I guess that's, I mean, it's extremely important that there's a process to allow local communities to have a voice. And I believe that very strongly. I mean, we would all want that if we were in a position where some kind of big facility was going to affect our land, even if I live in the middle of the city, as I do. So I think it's really important to make sure we keep the state interests in mind, but we have to allow local communities to have a voice as well. That's a very general answer. I hope that's helpful.
Madam Chair, and I appreciate you giving me a little extra time here, because I'm going to have to leave shortly for a transportation conference committee. But I guess, you know, you'd said something in your opening remarks that I want to zero in on, and that is you're learning to live, or you're finding out the constraints of the position or the job. And I was wondering if you could expand a little bit on that.
Well,
Commissioner Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Howe. It's, I mean, you can't just shoot off your mouth the way I could as a senator. It's just that simple. And I say that to be a little bit flippant, but it's very, very different. And the rules of the road are different on the Public Utilities Commission, and that's for a very, very good reason. And I respect that. I respect that. For those decisions to have integrity and to be respected by all the players and parties affected, we need to have those strict boundaries to how we operate. And that means that we're avoiding being influenced by outside of the process, and only get our information inside the process. Through the record that's developed. And oftentimes, for contentious cases, there is a long public process that, you know, an administrative law judge oversees the fact-gathering part of that and the public opinion-gathering part of that. And we can sit in and watch that, or watch it online, or read the record. And those are the things that we do to get that information. But we don't have, and that's what information comes to us to make our decisions. And so that's a constraint in the sense that you don't just go and talk to everybody you know to get their opinion about something as you might do as a senator. It's very different. And again, I'm not going to wake up and say, here's how Ellen Anderson wants the energy policy of the state to look. Instead, I'm going to say, here's what the laws say in Minnesota, and here's what information is in front of me on the record, and that's what I'm going to use to make a good decision. And those boundaries are set to ensure that our decisions are fair and meaningful and a little more predictable, because we know what the rules of the game are.
Senator Howe.
I want to, Madam Chair, just, you know, be 100%, you know, represent my constituents. And I've got a file folder of emails from people in my area that are concerned about your position when it comes to renewables and the fear that they have on getting a fair shake and what the personal biases that may come into that. So when I hear words of constraints and things of that, I think we need to be very careful, and that's why, to me, local control is very important. We face these issues when it comes to nuclear issues, and we're facing these issues certainly where it comes to the wind issues now. And Madam Chair, I just need you to make me feel comfortable about those personal biases that we all bring to the table wherever we're passionate about things. That role is very powerful, being the chair of the PUC. And I need you to make me feel comfortable that the personal biases and the record that you have in favor of renewables and certain standards is not going to be carried through into this role.
Commissioner Anderson.
And all I can do, Madam Chair, Senator, I think is just to assure you that I feel like I've said it, but I'll repeat it because I want you to be sure. That's important, that I will have an open mind and I will follow the policies that are set by the state of Minnesota. And that means by you and your colleagues here at the legislature and the governor. And just a word about, we have a long tradition of appointing legislators to the Public Utilities Commission. There's lots of other people that have served as well, but there's certainly been legislators appointed a number of times. And I think whatever party they're from and whatever their background is, they have all gone on to be able to set those views aside. And, I have a lot of experience working in energy, and I think that's an asset to help me understand what I face and the difficult decisions to understand them. But that doesn't mean that I can't be open-minded about pros and cons of issues in front of me. I can be, and I will be. And all I can do is tell you that I promise to be open-minded and to do my job the way that I think you expect me to do it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Howe. Senator Brown.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner Anderson. Twofold question. What is your vision for the PUC, and within current statute, how would you propose changing the way the PUC operates to reflect your vision?
Commissioner Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator. I think, again, the vision for the PUC is a little bit of repetition from what I've already said. But because our role is fairly clearly defined, I think, I think that energy and telecommunications are honestly probably the most important part of the backbone of our economy and of our quality of life. I mean, roads and bridges are still really, really important infrastructure, but in modern times, more and more, without energy and without a robust energy system and telecommunication system, we don't have a robust economy or quality of life. Yeah. And so our job is to ensure that we have that reliable, affordable, and environmentally sound energy at our disposal to back up our economy and our quality of life. And the same with telecommunications, that people have access to that no matter where they live in the state of Minnesota, that they have access to what they need to participate in the 21st century economy. And to the extent that we have the ability to support that and make sure that it's affordable and accessible, that's our job. And that's my vision for the future. That's where the public utilities should continue to go and move forward. In terms of statutes, I don't really have a lot to suggest right now. Give me a little more time on that. I think one thing that is a parent, with all due respect, and how do I say this? As a legislator, you're aware of it too. If you sit down and try to read the statute books, you find that a lot of the laws that, and I'm as guilty as anyone, that we have passed, sometimes maybe there's little contradictions here and there or inconsistencies, or maybe we spend a lot of time interpreting what the laws mean. And so there's always room for clarification. And I'm seeing that in a new light, and I don't have any specific examples of that. We do have an issue that we've talked about as a commission, and this precedes me. Previous commissioners and staff have talked about our concern about, since some staffing was moved from the Environmental Quality Board and split apart, we don't have the full complement of permitting staff anymore cited at the Public Utilities Commission, and I think that's something that could be improved.
Senator Brown, further questions?
No? I do have a follow-up, but if someone else wants to.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know you've been there just a short time, and this is kind of tagging off the vision question, but one of the things that we're looking at is expediting some of these processes and making them more efficient. Are there things that you're seeing in these early days that could help us move rate cases along, help make us more efficient in siting, even if they aren't going into statute, just operationally where you're at, to help the groups that come before you participate in a more clean, and obviously you're already transparent, but expedited process?
Well, that's a great question, and I think the last piece that I mentioned to Senator Brown, I think really would help if we could consolidate our permitting staff. There's all kinds of legal barriers that are set up by them being located in Commerce instead of at the PUC, and I think it would be a more efficient way to operate if we could all be together, and we could, there's wasted time there and wasted staff, and I could fill you in more detail, and as could Dr. Har, if you'd like him to, in more detail of how that actually operates on a day-to-day basis and creates barriers to efficient operations. I think staffing is another issue in terms of efficiency and trying to meet those statutory deadlines and not extend them. I understand, and again, this sort of precedes me, but I understand that, the PUC staff has not kept up with the workload, and I very much appreciate that the Senate has been supportive of us trying to improve that staffing, and that should help us stay on track for getting decisions out and permitting out as quickly as possible without the need for going past deadlines or extending deadlines. And I guess I probably would have better answers for other ideas after you give me a little more time. I'd be happy to come back with other suggestions.
Senator Benson?
No follow-up.
Okay. Commissioner Anderson, there are several questions I'd like to ask at this time. As you know, we are working on the repeal of the coal moratorium. And you've made several comments about the duty of the PUC is to make sure that we have safe, reliable, long-lasting energy. Do you feel that... how do you feel about this releasing of the coal moratorium?
Well, Madam Chair, I shouldn't even use that word. I apologize. What I've said as a senator is different from how I feel about it as a commissioner, because as a commissioner, again, whatever you all decide to do will dictate what we are able to do. And so in the immediate future, we don't have utilities coming to us and asking to site any of those plants, but over time, demand is likely to rise. And so we will have to... whatever comes in front of us will really determine what our decisions will be. And so I can't predetermine what we will see proposed to us, whether you change the law or not. But if you are if you do change the law, certainly whatever comes in front of us, we will look at with due diligence, and we will decide if it's in the public interest. And you know, again, I will be open-minded, and that will be my job, and that's what I intend to do. And that's really all I can say is that I don't have a concrete proposal in front of me, and that's what I will look at when I evaluate that. Do we have a need for it? Is it a good investment? Is it a prudent investment? Does it serve the public? And does it? Do our laws support this?
Well, Commissioner Anderson, do you? Hopefully, the economy turns around here shortly. Do you believe that the renewables or what we have in place right now can sustain us going forward in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years just on the renewables? Or do you believe that we need to address this baseload energy issue? And how would you address baseload energy issue?
You know,
our future needs.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I can't say exactly how I would address it, because it depends. I mean, we sort of take what comes to us in terms of proposals to meet that need. And so that's the job of the utilities to come forward and tell us their best guess about what the forecast is and how they propose to meet it. And then we weigh that against the statutes and the public interest. I think we're in a really interesting and evolving time. As you said, because we're in the recession, demand is down, and so that's hopefully will change in the future. That we'll get out of the recession anyway. That economic activity will continue, and so the question is, what energy sources will look like the best idea at that time? You know, wind looks really good right now. Natural gas looks really good right now. Their prices are low now. That can all change. And so, again, it depends on what comes in front of us. We know that the future of coal is, it's all evolving, and all of the utilities in Minnesota are looking very carefully at the impact of these proposed EPA rules, which I'm sure you've heard about, and what impact that has on their coal fleet and older coal plants or new coal plants. And so that's something that, for planning purposes, utilities are already considering as they make their long-term decisions. MISO is doing the same thing, and they're looking at the whole region and trying to make predictions about what our energy needs will be over time and whether there will be retirements of coal plants in the near future because of those rules, and if there are, what will generation needs be to replace those? And so there's a lot of planning going on right now, and that's something that I'm learning as much as I can about what all the discussions are. And the idea of all this planning is to be prepared for whatever comes to pass in the next few years. In my 6 years on the commission, I don't know if we'll be tasked with looking at a proposal for a new power plant. We may not. And if we are, we will consider all of those factors. And I just can't answer what the decision will be, because I don't know. And it wouldn't be proper for me to speculate.
Commissioner Anderson, but do you think that our ongoing needs can be fulfilled with renewable energy?
I don't. You mean forever?
Our ongoing needs.
I just can't answer that. I don't know.
So I can assume then that we're going to have to address a baseload energy situation at some time.
Madam Chair, I'm not comfortable trying to answer that question because there's so many factors that go into those decisions. And as I said, by the time a decision like that comes in front of me as a PUC commissioner, the answer would probably be different than it is right now. And it would depend on a whole range of factors and information that I don't have to help me make a decision. So I just honestly couldn't answer that right now because it's not an issue that we're facing right now. And in 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, the answers may be very different than they are right now. I don't know what they'll be.
So, Commissioner Anderson, what would be the circumstances for the public interest to add a new coal plant? What would we have to be to add a new coal plant?
I honestly can't answer that. I don't know.
Okay.
It would depend. It would depend on the facts in front of us and the needs and that balance of information that each proposal is different and has to be evaluated on its merits. And that's why I think it's difficult to just speculate.
Madam Chair.
Senator Betson.
I think the commissioner is saying that how we get there, I mean, if in 5 years or seven, there's a proven fact that we're 3,000 to 5,000 megawatts short, the demand is there. I hear her say that I think whatever has to happen will happen. Mm-hmm. Can you get 1,000 more megawatts in wind probably 5 years from now? Probably. Where do you get the other 4,000? And I would think you're trying to say, I think you're saying that you'd be objective when the need is there. Right now, I don't think, we used to think we were 58 to 6,000 megawatts short about 5 years ago, but I don't think that's the case right now. But I think Senator Anderson will, in my opinion, look at all options in a few years if the need is there with an open mind. So, quite frankly, I'd like to say that we can get there with bio and wind and everything, but I don't think we can get there if we need 5,000, in my opinion, 6-7 years from now. So I think you're going to have to look at all those options, all of the options.
Madam Chair.
I don't know if that's helpful.
Commissioner Anderson.
Well, Senator Metzen, that's very helpful. Thank you. And maybe I should just restate this because you're right. I will do what I need to do to make sure that our energy supply is what it needs to be to keep our state rolling forward. And I will look at all the options that are in front of us and make the best decision among those options. Because, we have to make sure we have a viable energy system that keeps our state rolling. That's the bottom line.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to see Commissioner Anderson in front of us here. I think there's probably not anyone more thoughtful and smart on any issue than Ellen Anderson, and I'm excited that she's in a position where she's going to be thoughtful about decisions that come before her. But I am a little confused about the questions that have been asked. So, Madam Chair, I just was going to ask you, maybe I don't know who can answer this, but it's been presented that the Public Utilities Commission is really a judicial body. They really aren't a policy-making body, but a number of the questions on the committee have been about how Commissioner Anderson feels about a certain policy. So I just want to get clarified. The Public Utilities Commission is not a policy-making board. They really make decisions based on what comes before them. So on issues of whether we'll have nuclear storage or the issues that Senator Howe's constituents have, these are issues that are going to come before Senator Anderson. She has to make decisions based on the law. It doesn't matter how she personally feels about any of these issues. She's got to apply the law as judges do. Am I correct in what the role of the PUC is? They really can only look at issues that come before them. Can they bring up issues themselves I don't know. I guess I could ask the PUC
Senator
that.
Senator McGuire, I would assume they can bring up issues also, but in all fairness, this is a confirmation hearing, and Commissioner Anderson has been a policymaker many, many years. So I do think these questions are appropriate because we do need to see where she stands on some of these issues. I mean, there are some major policy issues before the PUC that we need to have some comfort language, and we do need to know where she stands. So.
And so, Madam Chair, then do you want the PUC to be a policy board? If you're, I'm just trying to get a basis for the questions. If we're concerned about where they stand on policy, then are we thinking that the PUC is a policy board?
Senator McGuire, I think we'll let Mr. Fuller read what the statute says on the roles of the PUC.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Senator, I'm not going to read the statute, but they have more than a quasi-judicial function. They're quasi-administrative and quasi-legislative. So, for example, in the wind siting arena, where we have a general state law, the commission has the ability to make rules. So within the ambit of that general direction, they can make policy through their rulemaking function, subject to the specificity in the law that authorizes the rules, many of which are very general. So they do have an ambit where they're quasi-legislative. They wear three hats.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so they have to do that within the rulemaking process with the parameters of the laws that we pass, but they have that ability. But thank you for your responses. And can they do that on their own, or they do that in a rulemaking process with hearings and with input from other people, and they do it, they don't do it in a vacuum, I'm understanding. The rulemaking process is a very deliberate process with lots of input from lots of people, I understand.
Mr. Fuller.
Well, Madam Chair, they're a very unique entity, Senator McGuire. So they may have a docket where they issue an order that may have general application and not be applying to a particular case. So they're just very unique. They have a blend of these. So the answer to your question is sometimes yes, sometimes no. Almost always public input. Yeah, notice and hearing the input. Sometimes they refer it to an administrative law judge for recommendation. Yeah. But there's a mix. There's a blend.
Mm-hmm. Senator McGuire.
Thank you for that. And there's five people on the board, and so they have to reach agreement. They have to have a majority of people. So not any one commissioner is able to dictate their own personal belief if they should so desire to do that. Am I correct in that?
The UCA is made of five members appointed to terms of 6 years by the governor. No more than three commissioners shall be of the same political party. One member must live outside the seven-county metro area. And the chair of the commission is appointed by and serves a term concurrent with the governor.
Okay, and so, Madam Chair, if I could. So if one person would feel differently than one might like, as some of us might feel differently about these commissioners and their views, they don't have the ability to unilaterally make a decision on their own for any of these. They have to have a majority of the board making that decision, is my understanding. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll say some more comments, but I'll let other people talk. Thank you.
Senator Junger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just on that. I was going to respond a little bit. Senator McGuire, I do think it's well within the purview of a confirmation, and in terms of policy and understanding whether the commissioner that's appointed and whether the job parameters expect that the decisions made are made objectively as opposed to thinking of things from a one-sided perspective. So I think the way we look at things and the way we ask the questions will help us to decide, based on Commissioner Anderson now, what she's done in the legislature and how that relates to this job today. So I think it's very well within purview. And members, I have to apologize. I do have to go to tax committee here, and I have another 5 minutes, so I don't know how long we're planning on going, but I have a number of questions whether we do it when I come back or not.
Okay. Senator Stumpf, and then Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm the second youngest member in terms of tenure on here, I think. System tenure.
You're not
But I appreciate the questioning that was just done, and I think it seems to me now, and I'm sure I'll be totally wrong, but it seems to me that Senator Commissioner Anderson has a, and I was just looking over some papers, a long list of policy initiatives that you've accomplished during your legislative terms, and very knowledgeable and qualified. But when you look at all of the things that you think that commission covers, I thought, well, certainly, you know, they cover like cellular phones or the internet or something like that, but they're not in there. I was going to complain about when I go home, I don't have any cellular service because it's a black spot. It's kind of like a big vacuum where we live. The other thing is that I think that maybe, and this is more of just a statement, maybe there's a way that this committee could actually look at that, things that maybe should be covered. And I'm not sure who actually has control over, let's say, the cable TV services or the internet services. If it's not the commission, which I assume it's not, because it says here there's a long list of things that they do not regulate. So there must be a lot of fragmented control out there. And the question, I'll get to the question, is that if you had a map of Minnesota and you actually could point out what is under the jurisdiction of the commission, because I don't think, like the power companies up in our area, the municipal or the cooperative power companies aren't really under the commission, I don't believe. So, I mean, what would you have jurisdiction over? Obviously, down here you would, because I suppose of the private companies, but.
Well, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Anderson.
And Senator Stumpf, that's a great question, and I think you reflect what a lot of people in Minnesota think, you know, what they just assume that these things are all together. Yeah. But on electricity, you're correct. The co-ops, for the most part, all except for one, are not regulated as to their rates by the PUC, but there's certain state laws that do cover the co-ops. That, for example, the Renewable Energy Standard covers all the co-ops and munis in the state, or at least the ones that distribute energy. And we don't regulate the rate setting for your little local co-op. And we review their planning, their integrated resource plan, but we don't have as much power to tell them what to do. So we have more limited control over those electric co-ops and municipals, and more over the investor-owned utilities. Natural gas, more on the retail side and the siting of pipelines. But anywhere in the state, if you want to site a facility like a power plant or a wind farm or a power line, if it's in the state of Minnesota, they have to come to the Public Utilities Commission. And then on the telecom side, it is very confusing, and it's kind of evolving to a certain extent. And part of it is the federal government has tried to maintain control, and they've preempted the field to a certain extent. So they've told us we really can't regulate cell phones directly, but when cell phones use wires to complete a call from the cell phone to whoever's on the other end, then there is some connection. And so we do have some oversight there. And if they try to use federal subsidies, we have some review authority over that. So it's kind of a mixed bag, and it's not very clear to anybody. So don't feel bad if it's not clear to you. In Minnesota, cable is pretty much locally regulated, and I think for the most part. And Some states are different. Some states oversee, their commissions oversee water. A majority of states have water in their commissions, as well as some of them have cable. At the federal level, there's a lot of, and between state and federal, there's a lot of discussion going on about what are telecommunications services, because now you can make a phone call so many different ways, and you still call it a phone call, whether you're on your computer using some kind of an internet service to make a phone call, or a cell phone, or a landline. You might think it makes sense to regulate them all the same, but we don't. And that is an emerging and changing area of law that there's a lot of discussion going on between the states and the federal government. And I think it does make sense as we evolve and get more kinds of technology that we try to update our laws to reflect that, and that hasn't really happened on the telecommunications side between the state and federal government. So I'm hoping that that will change over time and that Minnesota can have a voice in that and trying to encourage the federal government to let us have a say about all of these different telecommunications services, because that way we can protect consumers at the state level instead of just having the federal government be your only place to go, which is pretty hard for an average citizen.
I believe it's Senator Benson and then Senator Dibble. Senator Benson.
Senator Dibble.
Oh, I have. Well, oh.
Okay,
Senator
well,
Dibble.
He hasn't asked
okay.
yet. So.
Oh, Madam Chair, I was just going to. We seem to be commenting on the nature of the questioning. I think it's. I agree with Senator Jungbauer and you, Madam Chair. I haven't heard any questions that are out of order that we shouldn't be asking. We certainly asked them of previous commissioners who have appeared in front of this committee for the confirmation of this committee in the Senate. I remember when former Representative Pugh was in front of us and we were kind of cranky about a decision that he had made in his capacity as commissioner. We were pretty direct in our questioning of him. He appropriately answered the question as a commissioner should. Which is, I've made my decision based on the facts and the record and my best understanding of the law in front of me at the time, left us somewhat dissatisfied, but it was the right answer that he needed to make. So I think any question we ask of Commissioner Anderson is fair, but I think it's important for us to respect the constraints which she's under in trying to answer them to the best of her ability, and I think she's doing a nice job on that. If this helps, I don't know if it does help, but I do recall, on this base load question, her Senator Anderson in the past, dealing with an issue of a particular facility that has been in front of the legislature for various considerations, and she herself saying, if in fact, we can find that this facility follows the provisions of law of affordability, reliability, controlling for environmental factors, economic factors, social factors. She said, I'll be the first one to jump on the bandwagon. And, that was in her capacity as a policymaker. Pretty admirable position for her to take on something that had some serious questions on it. And so I think that's probably reflective of the thoughtfulness that she had previously in her role as senator. And I think is doing a nice job of articulating even more so now that her job is to follow the law for the most part.
Thank you, Senator.
I mean, for the entire part, within the bounds and provisions that Mr. Fuller read to us.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Anderson, you talked about making decisions from the universe that's in front of you, the four corners of the law, as it were, and we know that there's a policy and a legislative portion of your responsibilities. But I guess when we're looking at the four corners of the law, the advocates that come before you bring different perspectives, and one of the privileges that someone in your position will have as a commissioner is to filter some of that as part of your own decision making, and you might not pick pieces off the table that everyone else picks up. And I guess that's where your strong advocacy as a legislator might come into play. And I don't even know how to correctly ask the question, but how would you mitigate, for example, valuing carbon when there is no clear market for it, but somebody might present for you before you a value of carbon? There are all kinds of controversial issues that haven't been fully vetted here so that we can give direction, and yet they might come before you at the PUC. And we can't put everything into statute. And so I guess that's where some of the concern about perspective comes into play.
Commissioner Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Benson. I'm really not sure how to answer that, what to say, except that, you know, I will read and listen and evaluate information and do my best to make a fair judgment. That's, you know, I think I'm very capable of doing that, just as any of you would be if you went off into a different capacity.
Senator Benson?
Well, I guess there's not really going to be a way to resolve this because you're very good at stating what your role is going to be in this position, what you've been doing for a month and a half, but I think there is some concern because you were such a strong advocate, and so it's not meant disrespectfully, but I know that all of us would have a hard time spending years advocating for a position and then trying to flip that switch. And so please don't take it as a sign of disrespect, but it's something that we need to be concerned about, and that that concern has been communicated to me as well. And so I want to lay it clearly on the table.
Commissioner Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator, I guess all I would say is it's actually kind of a weight off my shoulders to not feel the need to just be a voice for one particular position. It's kind of a nice change, and I'm appreciating it very much.
Senator Benson?
Nothing further, thank you.
Okay, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Anderson, I went back and listened to the last round of PUC confirmation hearings in 2009. So this is written down. Forgive me for reading this, but I don't want to leave something out, and I don't want to ramble. So regarding your opposition to PUC nominees in 2009, you suggested that Commissioners Wergen, O'Brien, and Boyd did not follow the law in the unanimous 5-0 vote approving the Big Stone 2 Certificate of Need. You suggested that conservation and renewables were cheaper than this project and that the ALJ supported this. I understand that there were two economic models, and after due diligence, the commissioners, all of the commissioners, chose one model over another that you subscribed to. They weren't being political. They found consensus. Given what I see as fair debate over the value of external costs of any power source, that is emissions, avoided costs, carbon, greenhouse gas, and other societal costs, is there not room for differences in opinion here?
Commissioner Anderson.
Madam Chair and Senator, when you just ask, is there not room for differences of opinion, were you reading that or is that your question?
My question is, in the last round of confirmation hearings, you did not support all three of those people because you felt they did not adhere to the law. But yet there were two models. They went, all five, not just the three up for confirmation, but all five went with a model with which you didn't agree. Is there not room for differences of opinion here?
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, absolutely. And you know, in all the years that I've been here, and you all have commented on what a strong advocate I've been, that's the only time I voted against any PUC commissioners. And at that time, as I said, I disagreed with all five of them. because it was a unanimous vote, and I did not because I disagreed with their conclusion. That I didn't believe that that was I should vote against them because I disagreed with them. I voted that way because, as I said, I didn't believe they had followed the law correctly, and we have a law that they did consider that stated that you have to compare a resource with whether you can do it more cost-effectively using a non-fossil fuel source. They considered that, and as I understood it, the administrative law judge had found that that other option was more cost-effective, and so that was what I was basing my concern on, that I thought that was what the ALJ had concluded, and that that's what the law required them to do. I must say that in retrospect, and given my short tenure at the PUC and having talked with some of the commissioners individually about this, I have a little more appreciation for the balancing act that they were trying to achieve in that decision. And so I do, you know, I stand by what I said. And again, I didn't think it was appropriate for me to question them based on opinions, but only on the fact that I didn't believe they were following the law. And also I should point out that although I did that and I said that, it was rather symbolic, and I didn't make any serious effort to deny them confirmation or to ask anyone else not to support them.
Senator Brown.
Yes, well, I appreciate that, Commissioner Anderson, but you did vote against them in the mm-hmm. confirmation hearings because of your line of argument that they didn't follow the law, and from what I was hearing listening to that, you felt they didn't follow the law because they chose a model, one of two models. They chose one with which you didn't agree, and not just three of them, but all five. Am I missing something here?
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, my understanding of, what I was thinking at the time was not about the models. It was about whether they had followed that law, period.
So, Madam Chair, Commissioner, can you be more explicit on what law you felt they weren't following that was so detrimental that you had to vote against them?
Commissioner Anderson.
Well, I mentioned the law. Perhaps Mr. Fuller could look it up and read it because I can't repeat it word for word. The law is on the books. It's been on the books since, I think, the 90s. And there's a lot of laws that they looked at in their deliberations, and that was one that was pretty pivotal in that particular decision.
Senator Madam Chair, my struggle here is one of the things you said in your introduction is the PUC commissioners tend to find consensus. All five found consensus in choosing this model over the other one, but yet the fact that they did that, they found consensus, it was a big enough factor for you at the time of being a legislator that you you even said to Betsy Wergen you thought you liked her personally, but you felt that this was a big enough issue that you would have to vote against all three of them. That concerns me in that they did find consensus, but yet they went with something that went against your point of view, and therefore you voted against them in committee.
Commissioner Anderson.
I'm just saying that
that
really concerns me.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Brown, again, I didn't vote against them because we had a different point of view. And I didn't vote against them on the Senate floor. I only voted against them because I believed that they didn't follow the law in a particular case.
Senator Magnus.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I saved this overview of the Public Utilities Commission from their presentation to us on January 11th this year. Senator Stump and I have been talking looking at this a little bit and thinking of some ideas here and concerns that I would have, and I know Madam Chairman, Commissioner Anderson, you've been a great supporter of renewable energies in the past, and you know I am too. I'm the
My district is the upper center of the world for renewable energy. Huge wind farms and ethanol plants, biodiesel plants, and soon to be the first biobutanol plant in the world is there. But as discussions have been going on, and I know Senator Howe, we talked about your district here the other day. They're not too enamored about wind with a lot of the folks there, and we've got a huge wind resource in my area, the internationally famous Buffalo Ridge. Senator Kubley and I share that, and so we've got a lot of turbines out there, and some folks like them and some folks don't like them as well, but since we have them there and we don't have too many people, our districts are shrinking. And we don't have that immediate need for energy. We've got to move it on. So I was looking in here, and I'm looking at siting and routing. I'm looking at transmission lines, and, you know, we've had that discussion for years, too. And we've had some of the studies. And I guess first I'd like to ask you, Commissioner Anderson, what your thoughts are on transmission lines, because I know the PUC is charged with siting those of 100 kilowatt or KV or more and 1,500 feet or more in length. And could you just give me some of your thoughts about this so I get a feeling on how we're going to move some of this energy around to the places that we need it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson,
thank
sorry.
No, I'm just looking for the gavel up there.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr.
Switch
Chair
hands.
And Senator
yes.
Magnus. That's a great question, and there's a number of transmission siting cases coming up before us, so I'm going to be a little circumspect in my answer. The PUC has approved the siting of the first big CapEx line, the Brookings line, and as I understand it, that line is really intended to help support renewables because of where it is. And related to that, going back to kind of where Senator Howe started us and where you were touching on, one thing that's been interesting is because there's been transmission gaps and log jams in recent years, more of the wind projects have been located closer into the metro area because there's just not transmission available in the further out parts of the state like your district that have the greater wind resources. And so I do believe that as we site more of those longer transmission lines and move forward with building out and supplementing the grid, that will help bring the wind farm siting more back to the really high-speed wind areas that are a little bit more rural, and maybe there won't be quite, I'm hopeful, not quite as much contention, but who knows? That can't really be predicted. I did carry the bill in 2005 that allowed the utilities to get cost recovery for CapEx 2020 to build out the transmission. So I guess I'm not sure what I can say. Just generally, I think, you know, the transmission grid has not been modernized in a long time, and it's slowly but surely moving forward.
Well, Madam Chair, and I, you know, I know these are tough questions to try to figure out, but and that's what I'm trying to do is sort through this and to try to have a little vision of where we of what's going to happen in the future. And I know we have great resources out there that we're trying to utilize to the best extent possible and the best ways possible. And so we do have that situation where we have great wind resources in my area and. Not unfortunately, don't have the demand for the electricity, so we need to work some of that out. But one other issue too that I've been working on for some time here now, and is pipelines. It's natural gas pipelines, but also anhydrous ammonia and propane, because Last year we didn't have this problem. We had an early spring. We were able to get the crops in. Everything worked out fine. In 2009, though, we have what I referred to as the perfect storm for propane, where we had, for the first time in history, needed to dry a lot of our soybean crop, which just, and you know me, I farmed all my life and still do, and, that was just a once-in-a-lifetime history if the climate change folks are right. That this happened where we dried a lot of the soybean crop, and we dried virtually all of the soybean crop that did not get to put up as high moisture corn for cattle feeds and so on. And because of the cool summer and the cool fall and late season and what we've discovered that year and a few of the years previous was that our infrastructure for especially propane and anhydrous is not up to snuff. And so I asked for a study on this, and I hope to be bringing that, Madam Chair, when we talk about this. One of the issues to talk about in the Legislative Energy Commission as we go in the interim here is some of these things, because it's obvious that our infrastructure is not up to snuff with the when we hit the huge demands there, because I'm concerned about it this year because it looks like we're going to go right from winter into summer here. We're not going to have much of a spring in this cold, wet year, not getting the crop in, and of course that's delayed, and it's probably laying the groundwork for additional propane demand, and if we do hit a perfect storm again like that. So I'm looking at just what we need to do, not just for the pipelines, which are important. But for our infrastructure in total. And so I just wanted to tip you off about that I'm very concerned about it, and this has affected us in the past. I have some entities in my area there going over towards Senator Rosen's district where we're at the end of the line in natural gas. We have some entities that are rationed at certain times of the year, and so I'm just not telling tales here. We're very concerned about some of this, and our economic development hopes are hindered right now with that sort of thing. So transmission lines, pipelines, all these sort of things are big concerns of mine, because representing the northeast suburbs of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, we get forgotten sometimes out there. So
no, we don't forget you.
Well, that's right. You're coming to see me.
I'm coming to see you. Okay.
So I just wanted to get your thoughts a little bit on transmission in pipelines and infrastructure and so on like that. So,
Madam Chair, Senator, I think
Commissioner Anderson,
have I answered that? I think it's important.
Well,
Senator Magnuson.
Madam Chair, anytime you talk transmission lines, you get everybody's attention. And I've been here a few years too, and when you talk pipelines, you sure do too. But, we've got to figure out how we move ahead. And we're in the 21st century here. We've got to figure out how we move ahead. That's some concerns I have as we go down the line here. So just wanted to voice those to you, Commissioner.
Duly noted. Senator Magnuson. Senator Howe.
Madam Chair. Commissioner, could you explain to me, obviously you've sat in this chair before and you've been through these confirmation hearings. Would you... just explain your position on whether you would look at somebody's totality of their whole career, of what they've done, or would you hang your hat on one specific incident where someone didn't agree or one case? How would you base your decision on confirming someone?
Commissioner Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator. Well, I have 18 and a half years of sitting on these committees, and, so about 99% of the time I voted to confirm whoever was in front of me. There's very few examples where I did not, maybe three or four during my entire career. So it's very rare. And, I think what's one thing that's unique about this, even though I do sincerely believe the PUC operates as a non-political entity. It just so happens by statute that we are set up to have party designation. And so I would say in the context of my appointment, number one, it's really the governor's prerogative, and that's always been expressed through year after year of all the different governors I've served under, all of whom were of the opposite party until this year. And, you know, 99% of those appointments I supported. But that's the governor's prerogative to pick someone who reflects their point of view. But in this particular case as well, someone who is of a particular party. And so I guess it's important to think that, to realize that for my position, for this particular, for any PUC commissioner position, that if one commissioner is not there, then they will be replaced with another one who is of the same political party. And so just something to keep in mind. I think you need to look at someone's qualifications, and you need to look at their ability to work with people and to keep their word. And you know, I guess this is just not an abstract question. This is a very personal question for me. And I'm very proud of my record in the Senate, and I'm not speaking about being an advocate, because that's part of what we all do, is to be advocates for things that we try to support. And that means we push them hard if we want to be effective. But also, I'm very proud of how I embrace public service. And that means to me being someone who is open and tells you what they think, and someone who keeps their word, and someone who works with other people and tries to find common ground with people regardless of your differences of opinion. And that's one thing about working at the Capitol that, and I mentioned this in my retirement speech, because it's been very meaningful for me, being elected and realizing what diverse points of view we have. Sometimes we don't realize that until we're elected and we come here because we come from our communities and we might be surrounded by people who are more similar to us. We come here and realize how many differences we have amongst ourselves and what a great big state it is. And one thing that I'm very most proud of in my time is to be able to work with people from all different backgrounds and find common ground, and to work with Senator Magnus and Senator Vickerman on renewable energy, and Senator Kubley and Senator Rosen and Governor Pawlenty on some things that we all shared values on, and to be able to accomplish things and always try to find common ground with people no matter what our differences are. And I think that's important, and I think that, you know, that's something that I bring to this new role, that I can work with everyone and I can find positions that will be broadly supported, not just by the people of Minnesota, but specifically that I can work with my colleagues and we can get things done that are good for the state of Minnesota.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, I was speaking in terms of what you give more weight, someone's totality of their career or one incident where maybe you didn't agree with them. And that's what I wanted you to answer, is what would you give more weight?
Well,
Madam Chair, Senator Howe, I think, as I said, in the vast majority of times, I think there's only one circumstance I can think of where I voted based on one incident, one decision. And we've talked about that already. And every other time I've ever voted on confirmation, I've looked at, you know, you defer to the judgment of the appointing authority because you can't control the appointments. There's a separation of powers, and you decide if somebody is competent to do the job, and if you trust that they will do it effectively rather than incompetently or inappropriately.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, and I guess that's to my point, you know, we did just talk about that, and it seems like you made one decision based on one specific case. You gave a lot of weight to that one issue, and So that's the basis of my question. Should we look at the totality, or is there, would you want to be judged on one incident or one particular point in history, or should it be a totality of it? And that's going back to that confirmation hearing. It appears that you picked out one point rather than looking at the commissioner's totality of their service, their public service. There was just one point in case, and I guess that's my point. My question to you is, how do we make that okay? Do we just view you on your totality, or is there one point in history where I say I disagreed with a decision you made or something that you carried or some bill that you brought forward? How do you want to be judged?
Madam Chair, Senator Howe, clearly I'd like to be judged on the totality of my record and my experience and my public service.
Thank you.
Senator, that happens probably a lot, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Commissioner Anderson, as you know, we have an energy policy bill that will be taking off the floor here shortly, and we worked on many things in there, and I think there actually is a very good bill. We're working on the cost of service, and we're directing the PUC to weigh more heavily in on that particular thing. What role are you seeing should the cost of service play in determining rates, and is there any justification for changing that criteria for the cost of service? There are some issues that hopefully we have ironed out, but we do have a letter from the PUC saying. And I'm not sure if you were involved with that letter at all, dealing with those concerns, but the shall and the may and the and the a of the cost of service, and it should be the primary determining factor in determining rates is the cost of service.
And Madam Chair, in the month and a half that I've been at the PUC, some things that I've learned, one is that we have what we call planning meetings, which are public meetings, but it's the only opportunity really for the whole commission, all five of us, to sit down and discuss issues, and that's where we talk about legislative matters for the most part. And so we did have a discussion about this bill and other bills. Our staff is here and monitoring and communicating constantly with I know with your office and with other legislators and interested parties, and that the PUC, you know, the tradition, as far as I can see, is to weigh in on legislative issues that affect our ability to do our job specifically, rather than general energy policy. We do not weigh in on, and that's why the PUC had a position on that bill, because it relates to what the PUC's authority is. Specifically in setting rates. And I can tell you the in that discussion, there were several commissioners that expressed concerns about the original bill and wanted to see a little more flexibility there so that it didn't take away from the PUC's ability to make to look at factors to find a balance of fairness and other things. I think I think you've received
we're
a final.
You some more water.
Thank
yeah.
you. That would be
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
I've been talking a long time.
It's a little glass there. You got so.
So I believe you have a letter now that suggests that that we're, you know.
It suggests the commission believes
okay
that the requirement
the
that the cost of service quote the cost of service shall be the primary consideration. I guess my question is, do you believe that there should be anything that should be above the primary consideration for cost of service? Is there any factor that should go above that primary consideration?
I don't think there's another factor that should be more important than that, no. I just think that it's important to allow other factors to be considered as well.
Okay. And, Commissioner, we also are... dealing with the inverted block rates, what is your opinion on that in this bill? Because that's going to directly affect you also.
Yeah, and I, again, is this something that relates to a current? Yeah, there's some current issue pending related to this in front of the PUC, so I guess I can't really express my opinion on it right now. I'm sorry.
Senator Junker?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for full disclosure, I want people to know that I did have a chat with Commissioner Anderson in my office and told her I was going to ask some hard questions. And so I always want people to know I'm not going to have fun with somebody in public, shall we say, without telling them in private that I'm going to ask some tough questions and things. You know, it's interesting, Commissioner, that since I've been here, and it's only been 9 years, but no other commissioner or appointee has ever brought any emails or phone calls, and here's just a few of the emails and phone calls I have that tell me they actually don't want you confirmed. And none of the other governors, commissioners, have generated so much as a phone call or a peep out of anyone, to my office anyway. So some people actually think you're kind of a controversial figure, so I don't know if that's a good thing. Maybe you could be a superhero on that or something. But one of the issues actually that's kind of interesting, and I don't know if you can give us some insight on this, but I've actually had DFLers mad because they thought Tom Pugh should still be there and that he was very good at what he did, and so they're mad that you got appointed instead of him. Did you have any insight from the governor? Did he think that maybe people serve out time and it's time for somebody new, that you had brought something new? Did the governor share anything with you as to why you got the appointment?
Madam Chair, Senator, the governor talked to me about why he wanted to appoint me, but we never certainly didn't discuss his decision about Tom Pugh, and I don't have any information at all about that. I know he was a very good public servant and a good commissioner, and I respect him very much.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, and I told you a little bit about this in my office, that, you know, based on your bills and things and the direction you headed over the years with your policy, that I found it would find it very hard that you could look at things objectively. And some of the first things you talked about as a commissioner, you need to look at that electric is affordable to consumers, that they have access to electricity. And, you know, I was looking at some of the bills you authored, and I have 7 pages of energy issues, related issues that you authored and or passed, almost every one of them, which created new mandates that cost the consumers more money and put new mandates that actually go out into the future that will continue to cost people money. And so some of what you implemented as a legislator, we won't even see for even years to come, and we're just now starting to feel some of that. So help me to understand that all those cost type of things that you added on as a policymaker, now you can step back into a different position as a commissioner in the PUC and even as a chair of the PUC and just look at things based on the law and the statute, what we direct you to do.
Commissioner Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Jungbauer. You know, I guess the law that I'm best known for passing, and a number of others, but I guess I would point to the Renewable Energy Standard in particular, just remind you that that passed almost unanimously in the Minnesota legislature and bipartisanly, that every member of this committee that was here in 2007 voted for that. Senator Rosen was a co-author, that the governor signed it, Governor Pawlenty. And so I guess I don't, yeah, I'm not sure how else to answer this except to say that I've worked on legislation that, I've worked on a lot of consumer protection legislation, by the way, and I think that the bills that we did pass, like the Renewable Energy Standard, was quite well vetted to be sure that, and negotiated to be sure that there were fallbacks so it would not create problems or high costs for consumers. And so I guess I don't agree with your basic assumption, Senator Jungbauer, that my actions are raising prices for electricity. I just don't think that's accurate. I'm sorry. With all due respect.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. I would be happy to provide any documentation about that I think I have on those issues. And I would be also happy to explain to folks and members and whoever wants to listen that when we vote on a bill, it doesn't mean we like the whole bill. And in fact, I did vote on that bill, and there was one part in there that was very detestable to me, very detestable, and it was on greenhouse gases. And that is one of the issues that you and I have had vehement disagreements about. And I guess even that relates to, you know, when you talked about your experience in energy, and you do have a wide variety of experience in energy, but I'd almost argue it's all one-sided, because at least when I talk greenhouse gases, I challenge everyone and have for 9 years that if you disagree with me and what my statements are, then please bring me the science. And for 9 years, nobody's brought me anything, including someone that somebody brought to our committee, John Abram from St. Thomas, that apparently does science by email, that said he had information that I'm still waiting for. But when you're that one-sided on issues and you don't even open the door to listening to other people, again, I find it very hard to be convinced that you could be objective. And I do have high regard for the amount of study you've done on other things, other than probably the only thing we disagree on is the basing energy standards on a climate change issue that's far from proven.
Commissioner Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Jungbauer, I think I'll just say again that, you know, a number of the initiatives that I've worked on have received very broad bipartisan support. And so I don't think it's, I don't think my ideas are extreme. I don't think they're one-sided. I think they have been broadly supported, not just within the legislature and the governor's office, but across the state of Minnesota. And, you know, I'm really proud of my budget bills. When I was a budget chair, all my bills were signed by Governor Pawlenty, and that was not every budget chair could say that over the last 4 years. I worked very, very hard to make sure that the positions that I put into my bills could get votes to pass and could have support from a variety of legislators from a variety of districts and from different parties. And so, you know, I think that, I think that speaks for itself, that it's not, I think it's wrong to try to paint me as an extremist. It's just not right. It's not who I am.
Senator Jungbauer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. I didn't say extremist. I said a controversial figure. And I believe, by all the same respects, and I'm painted as a controversial figure on those same issues. So, so we do share some of the same issues, except on opposite ends. Now I got distracted here in thinking about this, but you know, some of those mandates, I guess, and I've argued this on the floor over and over again, are regressive taxes on the poor, which anytime we increase the cost of fuel, heating fuel, electricity, all those things are extreme regressive taxes on the poor because they can't get away from whatever the cost is. And to your benefit, you've put programs together that tried to supplement folks for some of those issues. But I'm going to end on this one. I can't vote to confirm you, and the one reason is probably more personal than it should be. But it might make sense if I explain it in terms of science and reading. For many years, members, I've been trying to pass a water recycle bill here. And it's a lot of work. And so I'm just as passionate as the commissioner is. She's passed energy things. I've been passionate about the water issues. And so we've gone through, and we shared this in my office, the frustrations of trying to pass things you're very passionate about, whether people believe you or not. But one of the things you said, Commissioner, to me on my water recycle bill was I can't support it because I don't understand it. And I would argue that my water recycle bill is based on issues that have been around for many decades. California, everything was adopted from California. And I struggle, but in simple terms, if you couldn't understand my water recycle bill enough to support it, I don't think you can understand some of the extensive things you're going to have to understand at the PUC because they're much more complex than my water recycle bill.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Wanted to respond to Senator Howe, but now I want to respond to Senator Drumbauer as well. Senator Drumbauer, I think I just heard you say that your vote is based on political payback for a bill you couldn't pass. That's what I heard you just say loud and clear here.
Senator Drumbauer.
And I think that's highly, highly inappropriate.
Madam Chair and Senator Dibble.
Clearly, let me finish, Senator Drumbauer.
Senator Dibble.
No one has a better grasp of the issues, and no one is smarter on the subject matter that the PUC is going to be contending with than the commissioner who's sitting before us. And further, Senator Drumbauer, what you're proposing to do is to prejudge Senator Anderson in the job that she's going to do. The concerns that Senator Anderson raised about commissioners who have appeared in front of this committee previously spent some time as commissioners, and she subsequently did support them on the floor, by the way. So if we're so concerned about the job that she's going to do, maybe we give her an opportunity to show her stuff and to show whether or not she understands and show whether or not she's going to be objective. I mean, that's the minimum courtesy that we allowed. There's no rush to judgment here. You know, we can allow her some time in the seat and show that she's probably one of the smartest commissioners. Certainly has facility with all of the policy issues. She may not have, understood your perspective on this water recycling issue, but you just said you're frustrated, you couldn't get it passed, you didn't support it. We've got a majority now. You can pass whatever you want. I haven't seen a single member of the majority propose a bill at the table that hasn't been supported yet by the majority caucus this year. You know, the people I had to fear the most when I was in the majority was my own party. it seems like if you can get something moving, I guess you're going to get it passed. But to say this is political retribution time, this is payback because you didn't support my bill because you, quote, didn't understand it, and you're not going to be able to understand the matters that are in front of the commission. We haven't given her a chance yet to understand the matters in front of the commission. I mean, it is a statement of the most ridiculous to say that Senator Anderson, Commissioner Anderson, is not going to understand the issues in front of her. I mean, anyone can see she is one of the smartest members we've ever served with and understands this subject area, absolutely. And to Senator Howe's point, I mean, the point that I was going to make was exactly the same. The commissioners, that had appeared in front of the committee, those were folks who had spent some time at the Public Utilities Commission. One of them in particular had been a senator and had fairly strong views in the Senate and had taken positions that were hotly contested and very much disagreed with, particularly on energy policy. But we gave her the benefit of the doubt because she made repeated assurance and sustained promises that she would be objective, really dig in, and work hard. And out of respect for our knowledge of her, despite the fact that she is a highly partisan actor and figure in the Senate while she was here, we confirmed her. And she's gone on, and I think all the reports are she's doing exactly as she promised. She's worked hard, she's doing her homework, she's digging in and trying her level best to be objective.
Senator Jumper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Dibble, I'm appalled that you try to characterize that as political retribution. I was very clear, that if you can't understand something and you admit you can't understand something that has decades of documentation and history out there when you're trying to be a legislator, it has nothing to do with retribution, but if somebody tells me they can't understand something and I'm looking at other issues they need to understand, I should be able to make a judgment call on whether or not they can understand those other issues that have nowhere near as much documentation, if any. It is based on the things I said before. And I said it was the final thing, was the fact that she said she couldn't understand it. It has nothing to do with political retribution.
Commissioner, as you know, we have the RDF fund that we have pending legislation to stop fourth-year funding going forward because there are some significant issues about that RDF fund that have been come to light with the OLA report. And first off, as 18 and a half years of your fine work as a legislator, I appreciate that. But you also advocated and secured the funding for a lot of organizations in spite of the state law that clearly says expenditures from the account may only be made after approval by order of the PUC Commission upon a petition by the public utility. And there is a substantial amount of dollars from that RDF fund that was appropriated by the legislature through your committee, Senator or Commissioner, that is questionable. And we have talked about this correlation, this relationship that you have with the University of Minnesota as an adjunct professor. Are you employed at the university at this time?
Senator Rosen, I was an adjunct faculty the last 2 years, and I have notified them that that I will not be able to teach this fall. So no, I'm not.
Okay. When the dollars that were appropriated to the IRE account, the $5 million for each year, were you associated with the university at that time?
Madam Chair, let me start at the beginning here. Now, I'm not aware of what law you're suggesting that says the legislature does not have legal authority to appropriate money from the RDF. Is that what you're suggesting?
The law for the RDF says expenditures from the account may only be made after approval by order of the PUC upon a petition by the public utility.
And that's through the board, the RDF
right.
board. Those expenditures were
right.
to be approved by the board. But the legislature always has the authority to do something different than what it told itself to do. So there's not any limitation on the legislature being able to appropriate that money. There's no legal restriction on that. And
Commissioner, and that's your interpretation of the law.
Well, I'd really like to ask Mr. Fuller his interpretation, if I might.
Well, this is a serious question, Commissioner. This is a very serious question. And there's a tremendous amount of dollars that was appropriated by the legislature out of the RDF fund that we are just starting to find out that have trails back to your committee and you legislatively maneuvering money around from 07 on. So,
Madam Chair,
maybe perhaps the level, perhaps the law is not defined enough to say you cannot do this, but I think there's some very questionable maneuvering here of some substantial dollars that I am very uncomfortable with, and I know many members of this committee are extremely uncomfortable with. So if Mr. Fuller would like, if you have that, I don't know if you have that, Mr. Fuller, but this is a question that we talked about in my office, too, that the funding to IRE, was that appropriated at the time that you were an employee, and did you have any connection with that funding going to the University of Minnesota?
And Madam Chair, let me say the first time that funding, there's a long, as you know from reading the report, there's the legislative auditor's report. There's a long history of the legislature making appropriations from the Renewable Development Fund. And many of those preceded the time that I was the chair of the Budget Committee. So I was the chair for the last 4 years. But before I became chair, there was $10 million appropriated for that Mesabi coal gasification plant on the Iron Range. And that was, of course, passed by the I can't remember who the budget chair was at the time, in the House and Senate, and then passed by the full Senate. Although I voted against that. Before I was the budget chair, Senator Steve Kelly brought forward the original bill that took Renewable Development Fund money and gave it to IRE for the purposes of research. So that was started long before I was the chair of the Budget Committee. And it's continued. And yes, when I was the budget chair, I continued to fund them. And as a matter of fact, I sent Representative Hilty, who was the chair in the House at the time that I was the budget chair in the Senate, had tried to extend IRE's funding longer, and I resisted that and said, let's just keep it for one biennium. He wanted it for a longer time period. And in fact, I also have indicated to the University of Minnesota in conversations, and probably said this in my committee as well, that I didn't think it was really appropriate for ratepayers to be funding this kind of basic research at the University of Minnesota, even though I support what IRE does and I supported their research and I was encouraging them to try to find other sources of funding for that research. Now, going to the question about my teaching. When I was hired to teach at the University of Minnesota, I can tell you the exact circumstances of that, getting that job, because there was no connection between my teaching there and IRE ever, financially or otherwise, ever. And I just want to be very, very clear about that. And there's no connection between my teaching appointment and any of the funds that I oversaw from the Renewable Development Fund, ever, none. And there's a very preeminent scientist named Ann Kapuscinski, who is a fisheries professor, very widely recognized, had been a supporter of mine for 20 years since I first ran. And she accepted an endowed chair at Dartmouth. And she had been teaching some courses on sustainability, and I was at her goodbye party talking to a staff member, an administrative staff member who was there, who's a neighbor, and we started chatting about teaching, and I said, oh, I really miss teaching. I used to teach at Metro State. That was my first sort of other part-time job after being elected to the legislature when I had to stop practicing law. And she said, well, maybe you could come and teach this class for Ann, that Ann is leaving. And so I was hired at that time by the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resource Sciences, the CFANS College, to teach that course, which is an interdisciplinary course. So you accept students from many different colleges in the university. And my office happened to be at the Institute on the Environment, which is in the same building as IRE. And that's as close as a connection there ever was between my teaching appointment, which was paid fully by tuition, paid by students, as normal faculty receive. There's no connection whatsoever between these things.
Commissioner, that's good to know because the newspaper was wrong because they had it as IRE. You being sent to Puerto Rico on this trip with your students through the IRE. And
Madam Chair, I'm not sure which newspaper you would have read that in, but
Commissioner, we've talked about this. You
we
weren't
have.
Even aware about, but have proof on this newspaper.
Madam Chair, there was a blog, a very
there
political
was a article
blog
about it in the newspaper, the Star Tribune, Commissioner.
Okay. No, I take your word for it. I just don't
yes,
recall that.
Please do.
In any case, I was teaching a course last year on energy law and policy, and part of that class included a study abroad program where my students, we went to Mexico and took our students to the UN to observe the climate talks, the climate negotiations, and again, like my regular teaching appointment, that class and that study abroad program were paid for with student tuition and not by IRE. There was no connection to IRE. And so yeah, if that was reported, it was not correct.
Madam Chair, can I just ask
Senator Benson
what the plan is tonight, how late we're going, and I think Senator Anderson's been up there for a good, strong 2 hours and is trying to do the best she can. And I personally think she's doing very well. But I didn't know we'd be here till this long, and there's some reasons I want to get going personally, health reasons, so I just don't want to sit here till 8 o'clock. So can we get an idea of what,
absolutely,
if you plan on voting tonight? And I'll be honest with you, the way I feel, I think everybody's mind is already made up from what I've been hearing, so, but maybe not. I've been around here long enough to know that I can sense the mood here, and if that's the way it's going to be, let's get her done. And if not, we're going to come back tomorrow or something?
Well, what do you, Metzen, I appreciate that, and it hasn't really been almost 2 hours. That's amazing. Okay. Well, it's about a committee hearing long, a little bit longer.
Keep going.
I think we're done. I just want to make sure that we have all of our questions done. Okay. It's certainly understandable of your
You don't need me, I guess, you know, but I just think she's been on the
She has
chair.
Been, you probably should have got her a 5-gallon jug of water, I suppose.
Yeah, a couple Excedrin.
Senator McGuire, was it you or Senator Dibble? That had their hand up. Senator McGuire.
Oh, yeah. I did. Well, Madam Chair, I just want to make sure that I want to say something before we do end the committee hearing, so I can go now, or
Howe,
respond to Senator Metzen's question. I don't know if you wanted to give your intent.
Our intent is to have all our members here so they can take a vote. And we have a request out for Senator Vandeveer. He is coming, but he's coming from the SOB, but he is coming at this point. So we will be taking a vote here shortly. Senator Howe, do you have a question?
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I'm ready to
Okay. Senator McGuire.
Okay.
If I may make the initial motion, and then Senator Howe could write a substitute.
Okay. Senator McGuire first. I think she has some comments.
Okay. I would just make a few more comments, and then we can have the motions. I'm just on the last bit of questioning, just to remind, I know we're on TV, that many of us have this is a part-time job, so many of us do other work, and many of us are adjunct professors at universities, and so it's a noble profession. And also, we do need to be careful about what we read, what we believe in newspapers that we read, and I think we all know that, because we all know that newspapers oftentimes print things that they believe are correct, but that they're not often true, not always true. So I just wanted to observe that I am new to the confirmation process. This is my second one. I've had one this morning, and this is my second one in my history. And I'm getting to know how it goes. But I was believing before I started all this that as senators, we do have a responsibility to confirm what the governor would propose, what he nominates, and what he recommends. And it's not necessarily about whether we agree or disagree with that particular person's views on things. I mean, I know because of these positions, we may or may not agree with them on certain issues. But I think what we want to think about is, as a thoughtful body, as the Senate is and wants to be, that we really go to the decision-making qualities in the person. And we're really lucky that we actually have a person who we know how they make decisions. I mean, we know that Commissioner Anderson is thoughtful. We know that she works with people. We know that she tries to get information from all sides before she makes decisions. We know that she bases her decisions on facts and on law, not necessarily on whether she agrees with someone. When she was talking about the confirmation hearings in the past, it was based on whether they followed law, not whether she agreed with them on the issue. And so I think we're really lucky that we have someone before us who we actually know how she's going to be when she makes decisions, because we aren't going to find anybody necessarily that we totally agree with on all of the issues. And in the past, the Senate has confirmed people whether they agree or disagree on the issues. And this is not supposed to be partisan or political in our appointment and our confirmation process, as far as I understand. And this is unfortunately feeling more political than I thought this should actually be. I was confident that we know, we have a former colleague, for heaven's sakes, who has been with us, who has worked with all of you. I've known her when I was in the House, and I have known her to be fair. She's certainly, as has been noted continuously, smart on the issues, and she has a background in this policy area that lets her hit the ground, you know, running at some point. She has already agreed that she needs to learn more, and I'm glad about that. I mean, it's certainly a position that she needs to learn more about. So I am so thankful that Senator Anderson is before, or that Commissioner Anderson is before us, because we know that she will be thoughtful. And I hope that this committee does not do a political or a partisan thing. We have not seen that in the past. This body, as I understand, has never not endorsed a colleague, because they know colleagues to be thoughtful. They know their background. And the Senate has never in its history that I know of not endorsed a person that has come from them because of that. So I encourage all of us to not be political and not be partisan in this, and that we support a fellow colleague who we know will do a great job. We know will make decisions in a responsible way.
Senator Tipple. Are you making comments or a motion?
I'll do both. Huh?
Are you making comments or a motion? Because I'd like to make a few comments.
I was going to do both, so I can suspend if you like.
Okay. All right. And I'd just like to say, number one, thank you, Commissioner, for coming.
Thank you.
I hope the boys are good. Probably taller than you are, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's been an honor to serve with you these last 8 years. And you have done some really good work. I'm not sure how this is going to turn out. But you need to know that we needed to ask these questions. And to your point, Senator McGuire, these questions had to be asked, because we have served, we have worked on issues, and we do have some real concerns. Whether they were false in the paper or not, they were issues that had to be vetted through. So this is a very serious appointment with obviously many people throughout Minnesota that are concerned about this appointment, and I'm sure you know that, Commissioner. So we take this very, very seriously, and I just want you to know that. So with that, Senator Tipple.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Senator McGuire captured the comments and sentiment I wanted to communicate. Senator Anderson's resume speaks for itself. She's an attorney, licensed. I look at the criteria or the qualifications or the attributes that the governor is given guidance on in the statute when considering who to appoint to the Public Utilities Commission. Persons learned in the law who have engaged in engineering, public accounting, property and utility valuation, finance, physical or natural sciences, production, agriculture, or natural resources, as well as being a representative of the general public. Senator Anderson, in a policymaking fashion, has experience in all of those realms and has a strong legal background. We know her over the course of her service in the Senate. I don't want to repeat too much of what Senator McGuire said. And she spoke well for herself in that, and I think there's strong evidence in the bipartisan consensus that she was able to build around really difficult policy ideas, and bipartisan consensus around her budgets that she led. I want to be clear, I absolutely don't begrudge any of the questions that were asked. They were important, I agree with you, to ask and to vet through. I think the answers that she provided and the evidence in the record is clear. Nothing that was asked disqualifies her from the job in any way, shape, or form. And I would just ask us to be mindful of the fact that a number of appointments to a number of executive branch authorities, agencies, and boards and commissions, as well as, frankly, even though we don't have confirmation authority, a number of folks who have been appointed to the bench, not even quasi-judicial, judicial positions, have been folks who have been policy leaders, political leaders, partisan actors with really, really strong views who have gone on to provide, I think, good and admirable service. Ron Abrams, Dave Knutson, Tom Neville, a number of folks in the Pawlenty administration itself. You know, weren't my cup of tea. I had serious concerns and reservations, but acknowledged that they provided very, very good, diligent, objective public service. Senator Anderson is just embarking on this journey. And I can tell you that in private conversation that I had with her as she was considering this job, she assured me repeatedly, it's going to be different. You know, my job is going to be follow the law. I'm excited about that. And frankly, her decision to step out of this policymaking role and into this new role was because she saw folks were starting to take up the mantle of policy leadership. You know, she had kind of done a lot of work and she felt comfortable that people were stepping in, including yourself, Madam Chair, stepping into leadership and able to carry on and do well by Minnesota in the state legislature. So I'm thrilled with someone who's so bright, who has such a great personality, with such a strong character and moral center, is going to provide great service in this role. Well, I don't know what the formal, I know it's kind of a fancy formal motion, but in summary, you know, I'd like to make a motion that Senator Anderson's appointment as chair of the Public Utilities Commission be recommended to the floor of the Senate.
Senator Hall.
Second.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd like to offer an oral amendment to Senator Dibble's motion. And before I do that, I'll just say that and I don't envy your position at that end of the table. I was there not long ago when Governor Pawlenty committed me for an appointment to the Clean Water Council. And it was unfortunate, the line of questioning that took place at that hearing. I thought the line of questioning here was appropriate. I have constituents to represent. They have concerns. Like Senator Jungbauer said, no other appointee so far has generated the amount of communication we've received other than yours. So with that, Madam Chair, I would offer an oral amendment that Commissioner Anderson be reported to the Senate floor without recommendation.
Does everybody understand the oral amendment to Senator Dibble's amendment for the appointment of Commissioner Anderson as chair of the PUC to go to the floor without recommendation? All those in favor? Senator Dibble.
So, Madam Chair, I think that actually takes the form of a substitute amendment rather than an amendment to my motion. Otherwise, wouldn't we have to vote on the amendment and then vote on the motion?
I think you can orally amend it, can't you?
You can
orally amend it. It's amendable.
But then, Madam Chair, we have to vote on the amendment and then vote on the underlying motion.
You have to vote on Senator Dibble's amendment. Okay. Would you like to vote on your amendment?
Actually, Madam Chair, this is better. Because then we have the opportunity to vote against the oral amendment, and then we can vote for the underlying motion as amended,
right,
which is probably better for
Senator
us.
Senator Dibble, I couldn't hear you. What was that?
I would prefer we handle it in this fashion.
That we vote for your amendment?
No.
He's for that.
I knew this was going
to
happen.
No, I mean, I would like, Madam Chair, to the opportunity to vote against the Howe amendment to my motion, but then vote for the underlying amendment that would emerge, or motion that would emerge.
Madam Chair, you'd probably want a roll call. Is that correct?
Yeah. So if we can take this as an amendment to my motion, the how.
Okay.
All right.
So are we clear on that? We are voting on the Senator Howe's amendment to move confirmation to the floor without recommendation.
Correct.
A
and
roll
Madam
call
Chair,
has been requested. A roll call will be given. Assistant will take the roll.
Senator Rosen.
Yes.
Senator Benson.
Yes.
Senator Brown?
Yes.
Senator Dibble?
No.
Senator Howe?
Yes.
Senator Jungbauer?
Yes.
Senator Koch?
Yes.
Senator Kubley?
No.
Senator Magnus?
Yes.
Senator McGuire?
No.
Senator Metzen?
No.
Senator Sparks?
No.
Senator Stump?
No.
Senator Vandeveer?
Yes.
Was that along party lines?
There will be 8 ayes and 6 noes. The motion prevails. Do we take a vote on his amendment?
The amended motion.
Okay. And then we take a vote on Senator Dibble's amended motion to send to pass Commissioner Anderson out of the committee with recommendation. And a roll call has been without recommendation.
We need a roll call on this
one. You need a roll call?
No.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those in favor say no. All those opposed say no. The motion does not prevail. So we will be taking this to the floor. Thank you, Commissioner, and we will be talking. The meeting is.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for your time. Very serious consideration.
Well, yeah.